Good morning and welcome to this edition of Brass Tack Sunday for the 14th day of June 2020. As you know, this is Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, making sure that we are here Sunday after Sunday to bring the important topics to you and the experts to speak on the various fields. As they like to say, let the opinions contend during the week and let the facts come on Sunday. I'm your host and moderator, Corey Lane. We go until quarter after one this afternoon, backed by producer and technical operator, Dennis DJ Johnson. The number to call, 434-1790, as usual, or you send your short readable WhatsApp to 266-4862. Of course, you can use all the other ways to reach us as you are accustomed. And today we are talking about the education system and the reopening of thereof as we open back Barbados tomorrow, June 15, relaxing a lot of regulations but keeping the health protocols in place. Our special guest this morning is Mrs. Joy Addison, and she is the Chief Education Officer in the Ministry of Education here in Barbados. I want to say a quick good morning and welcome to her. Good morning and welcome, Mrs. Addison.
Good morning, Mr. Lane. Good morning, Barbados. Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to have you, and I'm sure you're going to be able to take us through this program, as many of the guests will be calling to kind of get a better sense of what how school would look in what is known as the new norm here and across the world. So I want to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday morning to join us here on Brass Tack Sunday. So, yes, please. So to you listening and you planning to call, I just want to set some parameters, because I know sometimes here we tend to get carried away. Today is not your opportunity to bring your personal grievances. If you do that in your one-on-one, we want to have that kind of macro discussion on the system, anything you may want to ask. Even if you have a serious difficulty you want to bring, I want you to bring it as part of a systemic issue to be dealt with across the board, because it's very hard to interrogate, and not even appropriate to interrogate in this type of forum. It never goes well. So I just want all of our listeners and all our potential callers and those messaging as well to kind of understand what it is we are trying to gather from the program. So before we take the break and get down to brass tacks, I want to start on a positive note. I want to give a congratulatory note to my colleague, not only for Brass Tack Sunday, but for Down to Brass Tacks as well, Mr. Sanka Price, on his new assignment. I wanted to take the opportunity, the first time I got the opportunity to sit in the chair, to send my sincere, heartiest congratulations to him. With that said, it's time to get down to brass tacks. This is Brass Tack Sunday with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. For business surprise, big or small,
at Williams Metals, we have it all. Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipe, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material. For business surprise, big or small, at Williams
Metals, we have it all. At Williams Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Okay, let's start with the Chief Education Officer. And the first question, before we even get to the reopening, I want to look at the virtual classroom initiative. And I want you to start with the good. The good, people usually say we leave out the good, the positive. And then they say we focus too much on the negative, because the good takes care of itself. It's the negative that we have to, where the issues, the problems, the roadblocks we have to fix. But I want to start with the positives. What were some of the positives for you in that, you know, the Google Classroom initiative and actually working away from the classroom for the first time in our history?
Okay, thank you, Corey. One of the things I want to say is that I really want to thank and congratulate all of our teachers and our principals in both the public and the private schools who stepped up to the plate. Because when we closed school on March the 18th, we had to step into this literally soon after that, after we had our break at Easter. And all of the teachers came on board. Before we actually closed, the teachers would have been issued with the emails, and the students would have been issued with the emails. People stepped up to the plate. And even if we didn't have the training as we would have wanted. We made sure that we had the extra training. More persons came on board. They tried, they went and they got the YouTube videos. They tried wherever possible to make sure that they were ready. And they did, and they stepped up. So we had the synchronous where you were having the face-to-face, and you had the asynchronous. And I think that persons started helping each other. And I think that from this lockdown phase and this pandemic, we started forging links with persons that we didn't even know. Parents stepped in, not only the ITC, but parents stepped in and they went and they helped persons to make sure that they were all set up. Persons opened their Wi-Fi so that their neighbors would be able to have mm-hmm. access. Persons donated devices, the private sector. We can't but thank the private sector and the NGOs and the individuals out there. People from Canada sent or from all over the world would have sent monies to buy devices, and everybody tried to help each other. So I want to say that from this, the teachers stepped up to the plate, the principal stepped up to the plate, and then the general individuals and the public, they also reached out. We're having persons reaching out even now. And I was able to visit, and you would have seen some of the videos going around with the minister and myself and other officers from the ministry. In one day, we were able to visit 3 or 4 classes. We could not do that before because that meant driving from one school to the next. Mm-hmm. And we were able to participate in the classes. And I can tell you that the children are enjoying it. Yes, it was new for some people, so they had to get accustomed to it. But generally, at this stage, a lot of people are saying they really do like this online teaching. And I have a nephew who says that he prefers this than the actual face-to-face going through. So I think that we learned from each other. And yes, there will be some teething problems, but we were able to get through it. And if we need to go for any other reason, if there's an environmental problem, if we have problems with the weather, if we have any reasons that we have to shut down, we know that this can work. So those are one of the things I think that came out from this. We're all working together. We're all trying to get it to work. And people are stepping up to the plate.
All right, so I really wanted to start there and on that point, especially when we look and we examine the community spirit that came out of this, because I know of some families to this day who have opened their Wi-Fi to some of the less fortunate in the community and so on, and they've had persons over to use their device, persons that had no device whatsoever to use. So I believe that some level of community spirit came out of this initiative. Now, in terms of some of the roadblocks, now you would have mentioned that the teachers came on board readily and so on. And for me, my experience has been a little different. I know that, and not to be a negative Nancy, but to be a realistic Roger. And that is to say that usually when you have these things, you kind of have some resistance to anything that's new, or lack of enthusiasm to anything that's new. And it will come from all quarters, some school administrators, parents, and, you know, right across the board. And the question is, what mechanisms did the ministry put in place to increase that over time? Because, of course, that was in the beginning. But as we started to move, I started to sense more enthusiasm and more participation across the board.
Yes, I agree. And you know the thing, I think after a while people realize, well, this is what we have to do. They started to come on board. There are some people we know that with any new initiative will never get on the bus, but we will have to work with them. So therefore we will hold their hands and we will try to make them understand, well, this is how we have to do things. Quite a few of older persons now have to do things online. They have to get the assistance. They have to be able to call in to use the WhatsApp. So things are changing. And yes, there will be some resistance, but we will work with them because generally the majority are on board.
Okay. I think that obviously the ministry would have its work cut out for you, but I am sure you are equal or greater than the task ahead, because as you said, there are some older people who would sometimes resist change or resist technology. And one of the things I found, because I have 2 younger ones, The issue with them for me is attention span. So being able to sit in front of the computer for those classes have been very, very difficult. If not only for them, the parents, in terms of keeping them engaged with the screen and with the teacher on screen. So I'm sure with the older and the two ends of the spectrum may present some difficulty. But as I said, I'm sure that you all are equal or greater than the tasks ahead. Now, let's get to the reopening and some of the mechanisms that have been put in place and some of the... Now, I understand there's a schedule. I was trying to get hold of it that was put out. And one of the things that have caused some comments to come into the studio already and some calls from last week is this idea of, like, the toilet seats. I'm part of the Optimist Group Bridge now, and I know they have an initiative where they would have refitted Belmont with some toilet seats some years ago. And they're looking at helping the ministry with this because they recognize that there are some schools that would not have enough toilet seats to close, to flush, as the health protocol suggests. So what are some of the mechanisms that y'all are putting in place to ensure that the health and safety regulations are followed as laid out by the Ministry of Health?
Okay, we've actually been working very closely with the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and their inspectors would have been visiting the schools. From before, we had, remember last week, we had the secondary schools opening for their SBA and their CBQ students to finish off any outstanding work. So they have been monitoring the schools and they've been working with us. We are making sure that our bathroom situations, that is corrected. I did hear about your call and I was able to investigate, did my background work. And that school, the area where the children will be using the bathrooms, those bathrooms have covers. But all of us would have been visiting several schools in the past. We are trying to work, and we know that the government of Barbados, they have allocated large sums of money to repairing bathrooms, especially the schools that are used as shelters. So it is an ongoing situation. But we are not putting anybody's child or ward in an unhealthy situation. And our Education Technical Management Unit, what we call ETMU, they have been out in the field and they're making sure that all of the bathrooms and all of the protocols are in place as stipulated by the Ministry of Health. And the Ministry of Health, when they identify any areas, we are fixing it right away.
Okay, excellent. It's 12 minutes after 11, and our special guest today is the Chief Education Officer, Mrs. Joy Adamson. And she is here with us to answer your questions, your queries, and to provide factual information coming from the Ministry of Education. Now, one of the things I like about this program is it brings the diverging views. So I'll read our two first WhatsApps and then we open up the telephone lines. This one came and it says, "Good morning, Corey. My daughter is in third form. She told me that she prefers the online classes because there's no distraction as it might be in an actual classroom. She also says she has more time to research her assignments and she can email or WhatsApp her teacher and ask questions. But this one on the other side says, good morning. I'm at my wit's end as it relates to online learning with one of my children. She is at the primary level and has not had any meets with her class teacher. Her lack of interaction with her teacher is affecting her because she can see all the other children interacting with their teachers."
Okay, and as I said, with the third former and liking it, that was also relayed to me. I would need probably, if we can, at the end of the program, get the name for that school and that parent, because I will need to do the investigation into why there was no interaction, because from my education officers going out there, some of them will be doing synchronous, where they're face-to-face, they'll be sending work, they'll be interacting. So I would like to get that information so that is something I can investigate.
Excellent. This last one, we go back to the lines. Good morning. Happy Sunday to you and your panel. I am one who opened my Wi-Fi for two little girls to use, but I'm glad they're going back to school. Hopefully they will follow the guidelines. Okay. Good morning and welcome, Brastack Sunday. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Corey.
Hi. Good morning. Morning.
Good morning to Mrs. Adamson. This is Mr. Eiffel here from the Eiffel School.
Good morning, sir.
You know, obviously my views are going to be quite interesting, but the first thing that I want to say is that we have to look at the difference between leadership and management, you know, in terms of what is happening at the ministry. When the COVID and the schools would have been shut down, obviously the ministry had to mobilize quickly. It takes a large effort to be able to do these things, especially if most of the individuals that are doing it they also have their own families and things to do. So for me personally, I just want to say to, you know, the chief and the officers, and I'm saying it from being a product of the public school system, being someone who has taught lessons, someone who runs camp, someone who runs a school, being a teacher, it is not an easy journey when you're transitioning to online. So that is why, Corey, when you started with the virtual learning, how it was going, I thought that was very interesting because 2 years ago we said that we were going to work on a portal, a platform that can manage these things. And we realized that when we introduced it, that students who were generally scoring at the bottom of the class, and I can say this from literally I have the portal open, Eiffel Online open in front of me right now, the students enjoy the use of the portal, and we don't do live classes because the advantage is that you can go back over. Since we designed the portal ourselves, obviously we can see how many times the student logged on. There are algorithms that I have built in that you can correlate the amount of time with if they understood. If a child struggles with something, you can do that. But I want to look at this from a parent's perspective because the ministry has taken a lot of pressure from unions, teachers, you know, what have you. And it's never easy when you're at the top. And I give my students this example all the time. If the listeners and everyone holds out their hand like a palm, and you take any fingernail and you look up, okay, you look from the fingernail's perspective, that is singular. You're only seeing it with the amount of information you have. When you're at the top, but your wrist and you're looking down, you're looking at five different points of view. You can see where they're coming from. So if you have to look at it from the chief's perspective or even the prime minister or the minister of education, when you're looking at things, everyone has something to say, they have something to offer. It is impossible to please everybody, and I have tried to do that and failed miserably at it, you know. But the parents, you know, have to take a lot more responsibility, and I can talk about some of the positives and negatives in this space because many parents have realized now how hard teachers have to work, okay? Teachers work extremely hard, and yes, there are some teachers that put in more work than others because if I say some teachers teach and others don't, I know where that is going to go, so I'm not going there at all. But the parents have to now step up to the plate. When I was going to school at St. Stephen's, and I know Corey went there, top school, you know, you didn't have, most of the students knew how to read before they came into school. I've heard parents say, well, the teachers didn't teach my child how to read. That is not their responsibility. It may fall under some purview if they're going to reception. And it's obviously going to be difficult to deal with a reception student or infancy and be during the online environment. And I've seen parents, I've seen people on social media lash and say the ministry isn't doing this and that, and I'm saying they have done everything they could possibly do. And I'm saying that as somebody who critiques and I would criticize. They've done everything they could do. What more would you expect them to do? You know, and from the private school space, and this is something that I will say to the chief, the ministry does not have the capacity in the public school system to deal with the fallout from private schools, because there will be fallout. And I said this when it started early. A lot of the private schools said, we're fine, we're good. That wasn't the case. They can't be good because people don't have the ability to pay. So therefore, they're going to have to withdraw the child. And in our case, when we would have said, you know, well, if you can't afford the fees, you have to cut from the portal, you're going to have fallback. And that will happen from school to school. But the ministry or the public schools can't take the amount of students in. And I know their parents are wondering about September. And that is why at least I can appreciate the ministry giving updates every few weeks. Some people would want that the chief or the minister or the prime minister say, listen, this is what we're going to do in September. You need to plan things as you're going ahead. You know, like I meet with my parents quite often, and I update them, and I say this, and we discuss things because I believe in discussing. So I just want to say to the ministry, and they've been very helpful in terms of disseminating information. I know some people may not get the Wi-Fi or get the tablets or get the, you know, systems to assist their children, but it is not a perfect world, and they are trying. It is not like other parts of the Caribbean, because I've traveled to different parts of the Caribbean and looked at the education system. And Barbados has a lot of people working, trying their best. But I think some people are extremely unreasonable given the circumstances, and they want more than they can get. Okay, and that's it. I think I'll end there before, you know, the chief revokes my school license.
Thank you very much. I give her the opportunity to respond to some of the things you said, and thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Eiffel. Yeah, we've been working very closely with the private schools, and from the time we had the lockdown, we've had a lot of meetings, online meetings with several groups, and we always engaged the private schools in the initial stages, what was happening there, and then we also had meetings with them as we were looking to reopen for the CXC and for the Barbados Secondary School entrance exam. So thank you very much, Mr. Eiffel, for your kudos relating to the ministry. And what he said is really true, in that we now have an opportunity for persons to interact closely with their teachers. Some teachers are actually saying parents are messaging them on weekends, on holidays, sometimes late into the night. So we've had to make a plea to parents. We now have this open exchange. But please respect their time as well. But it is true. And I know that there are some parents who can't wait for schools to reopen because they're constantly saying, I don't know how teachers manage with this situation, as they listened in. So, yes, we are assisting the private schools. We are assisting wherever possible, and we're sharing information. We have set a whole set of posters that would have been donated through UNICEF and even here at the ministry. And we have issued them to all schools, both private and public schools, so that we do have the appropriate signage as stipulated by the Ministry of Health. So we are sharing, and everything that goes out, we are also making sure that we are sharing with them as well. So we know that probably come September, we have to put our heads together and to work out how that will operate. So that is something that is the next thing that we have to focus on in terms of reopening, when in September and how in September. So that's something we're addressing.
All right, this one addresses you directly, so I'll ask this and then go back to the lines. It says, hi, morning, a query for Mrs. Adamson. My daughter is in class 4 and has respiratory problems. I am concerned about the wearing of the cloth mask for the period of time at school. I inquired with the school whether they would allow her to use a disposable mask and a face shield, and they said that the Ministry of Education's guidelines stated cloth mask only. Is there any room for consideration for the wearing of a face shield and a disposable mask?
Okay. I've attended several PTA meetings, and we are in discussion with the Ministry of Health and Wellness as it relates to the mask. I don't think that our guidelines actually said cloth mask. It says a mask. And we were following that guideline from the Ministry of Health. The question that a lot of persons are asking is if they can also wear the shield rather than the mask. And we have said that the mask is recommended by the Ministry of Health. What we are in discussion, and we will give an announcement about that hopefully by the end of the day or early tomorrow, if they have to keep the mask on while they're sitting inside the classroom. And from discussions that we have been having with the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the minister and I, we've been discussing this as well, is that if somebody has problems, respiratory problems, if they're asthmatic and they're uncomfortable, we have to allow them to take their mask off. The discussion is you have to come in with a mask on, a face covering on. We are providing cloth masks to every student and persons working on the compound during this period of time. If you are seated at your desk and all the desks are placed 6 feet apart, if while you're seated, you can take your mask off, and that is a discussion that we are having now. But a final decision will be stated hopefully by the end of the day about that decision. So we are not telling persons that it must be cloth. We're saying that you have to have a mask on when you're interacting, when you're on the school compound. And so I know that there's some asthmatics, and I've actually made recommendations of the ones with the respirators that you can actually purchase if you want to give your child a mask and a shield. That is your option, but it doesn't have to be cloth. We are providing cloth masks. The Ministry of Health, they had said that they're leaving the surgical masks for the medical professionals, but we know that there are also masks out there for on sale at other retailers, at other pharmacies, that they can also purchase. We're also providing the surgical mask for the school, the disposable mask for anybody who is ill at a particular point in time, that we are recommending that they put those masks on and they be placed in a quarantine area. So for the first day, because the masks will not be distributed to the students before Monday, the latest Tuesday, but we are expecting that all students will be issued with a cloth mask. That UNICEF, they have come on board and they provided a whole set of equipment for the school. So these masks will be provided, but for the first day, for tomorrow, we will expect that the students will come with their own masks. They can travel on the however means, if they're walking, if they're being dropped off to school, if they're taking the public transport with a mask on. We are recommending that they change that mask while they're on the school compound, and we will give directions to all of the class four teachers and the principals as it relates to once they're seated and we had inspections, our education officers would have gone to all of the primary schools to ensure that the desks and chairs are placed 6 feet apart. While you're sitting at your desk during the day, if you can take your mask off during that time, but once you are moving around, that you must have a mask on. And that is one of the recommendations that we're given. The other thing is, the Ministry of Health, they have always said that the shields by themselves are not protection. Mm-hmm. So if you are wearing a shield, it should be a shield, and the mask is really, really for the medical professional, if they have splatter, or if you're a dentist and things are splattering up on you, to have a shield. But the shield alone is not protection. So we are taking the guidance from the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and that is what I want persons to understand.
Okay, we take another call. Brastat Sunday, good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Lane.
Hi, morning.
Good morning, Ms. Addison.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm the parent of a student that is scheduled to write the 11 plus exam next month. And I have two questions for you. Now, recently I read we're in another Caribbean island, the Ministry of Education there, they have made a decision that students writing the CXC exam would not require to wear a mask. Now, as adults, we all can attest to some sort of discomfort from time to time wearing the mask, and also for those adults and children that are wearing glasses, wearing their mask tends to fog the glasses up also. So I'm wondering if there's any decision made at the level of the ministry here regarding wearing of masks on the actual day of the exam, since there are going to be all sorts of anxiety surrounding the exam on that particular day. Is there a decision made regarding the wearing of masks on the 11-plus exam day? My second question is, in light of the July 14th exam date, taking into consideration the correcting of papers, issuing of results, which we know normally take about 4 weeks, I'm wondering, for the new forest farmers, would they be going back into school at a later date? Are there any plans regarding that, taking into consideration that parents would have to get uniforms, registration into schools, books, and that sort of thing? Also, I would like to say that my prayer daily is that nothing happens to change the date for the exam, because as a parent, firsthand I can tell you there have been a lot of frustration, anxiety, fears, and everything regarding the date of the exam, whether or not it would happen, when it would happen. And I can tell you firsthand that my child right now is tired in terms of the ongoing work, stuff like that, and can't wait to get the exam over with. So I'm really praying that nothing happens during the course of time that would interfere with the set date for the exam. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Excellent question. And like you, I'll start with the last one. We too constantly are praying that nothing happens that we have to change the date. We would want this date. I know that they've been anxious, and I know our teachers are tired because, Corey, they have been working from the time school closed from March the 18th. They never really stopped with the class four teachers. Mm-hmm. So they're tired, and that's one of the things I've been sharing with them. We had a meeting with all the class four teachers last week, and we told them that in between the English and the math, that you have to do something light with the children. Other topics, more physical activities, even talking about them, about how they're feeling, about preparation for schools. I know that some schools actually had counselors coming in, talking with the children. But we are sticking to this July the 14th date, and we're praying that in between now and then, this month that we have, that date remains the same. The other thing in terms of writing, I don't know if she missed what I said earlier when she was calling in or waiting for the call, but we are looking at the removal of masks while they're sitting at the desk. So that will go for the teaching, and that would also go for the writing of the exams, both CXC and for the BSSE. As it relates to writing and correcting and the start date, well, we are in control of that. The Ministry of Education, unlike the CXE, which is a regional exam, we're in control of the date set. We're controlling of the we are in control of the marking process, and obviously the start date in September. So we will not in any way disadvantage children transitioning into secondary schools, and all these things will be taken into consideration. When the results do come back, when you are informed, and a period of time before the child actually has to go into school. So we will be in control of that, and we will be looking at that. So no need to fear.
Okay, excellent. Two quick questions and back to the line. This one says, well, a comment. Hi, good morning, Corey and guests. I wish to thank the Ministry of Education and the Teachers Union for facilitating the completion of the CXC SBAs. The protocols in place, according to my son, were well followed on the occasion that he attended. This other one says, good morning. I would like to hear Mrs. Adamson respond to Mr. Eiffel's suggestion that public schools will have an influx of students from private schools due to financial constraints. How does the ministry plan to handle this?
Okay. I did check in with all of my secondary principals on Friday, and all of them, they were very pleased with the protocols and the cooperation with by both teachers and students, and even the parents as well. The protocols are in place. They are following them. And children, obviously, initially, they were very glad to see their friends. So the social distancing, that was the challenge initially. But after a while, they got accustomed to it. And one of the things I want to stress that one principal told me that I want to share here is that they're following the protocols once they come through the gate. But sometimes she's observing that once they get out of the gate, mm-hmm. they're taking off their masks and they're social distancing. They're not adhering to that. And we want persons to continue to practice it even when they're on the road, to wear their mask and when they're traveling on the bus. Well, I don't think they can get on it unless they do have a mask on, but they maintain that social distancing. I cannot predict the future for the second question. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you no, that we will have a large influx or we will not. But wherever possible, school is mandatory, education is mandatory for our children, and we will try wherever possible to accommodate. We've had requests. When we had a retrenchment, we had to look for alternatives as well. So we will try wherever possible, if we have to, accommodate anybody who would want to transfer in to the public school system, because education is mandatory.
Right. For me, and you as a manager would know this, that it is not about predicting the future. It is about praying for the best and planning for the worst. So it must have some plan, because it is a reasonable concern and a reasonable expectation, especially if the private schools are not as flexible in terms of payment plans, et cetera, et cetera. So it's something that we may have to put a plan in place for. We take another call. Brastack Sunday, good morning. 25 minutes before noon, we take another call.
Good morning to you, Corey, and Miss Adamson is the name.
Yes, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Right. Now, my question is to Miss Adamson. Does the Ministry of Education monitor the private schools as they do with the public schools?
The Ministry of Education, what we do is we register the private schools. They register, they, every year they have to indicate to us the staff and the curriculum that they're following and that they have certain protocols in place. They must follow the national curriculum, and wherever there's anything national, we always involve them. If we do have a report, we do follow up on the report, but generally they're autonomous organizations.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, I used to see education officers go to public schools, but I don't know if they go to visit private schools as well. But my question, my next question is, how do you rationalize these different modalities in delivery of education during the COVID period? And I saw three types, really. And in my house, there were two in particular that I was concerned about. At one private school, and these are two children about the same age, at one private school, tuition was done online for 5 hours a day. That was from 8 o'clock to 1:30, with a really rigid regimen. And then the other private school, there was no online at all. There was just simply work for an hour via something like email, and the disparity between it was so great. And I'm wondering if this is something that the minister would be concerned about, or if it's just, as you said, an autonomous situation, so they can do as they like. But I'm wondering if that is something that should be looked at, because I don't think that when I assessed the children, they were getting the same type and level of education, even though you're saying that they're following the same curriculum. I can see a big disparity in the difference. And you would obviously see it, because there's no way a child could be taught for 5 hours and the next one for an hour, and they could be assimilating the same amount of information. So can you enlighten me on this, please?
Okay, you're now bringing it to our attention. Again, we can share that information with us. But when we met with the private school, one of the things, and when we met with all both schools, both private and public, we were recommending not extended periods for teaching. So 5 hours, 8 to 1:30 being a little bit long. And on the other hand, from one extreme to the next, to have the work for only 1 hour and not face to face. I don't know if they had the facility to do the face-to-face. I can't speak to that school, but those two extremes that we wouldn't want. We know that the situation was fluid. We know that people had to adjust very quickly. So between March and now, there would have been different modalities, as you said, but we would have to monitor it. But moving forward, where we hopefully might have a blended thing, you have to set strict protocols and regimes, and this is the policy, and then we would expect all schools to follow the policy.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, sir. This is Brass Tack Sunday. We are talking to the Chief Education Officer, and we will be back thanks to Williams Industries Incorporated.
For building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
All right, so we come back on this one here. This one says, I want to strongly recommend that we open schools earlier and close at 2 p.m., and that we should also look at Saturday school as well and do it on half day. Strong recommendation coming from someone here on WhatsApp. And this one, there's a debate, funny enough, on both the chat and on the WhatsApp in relation to the comment that Mr. Eiffel made. Good morning, Mr. Lane. I work at a school and I agree that with Mr. Eiffel, some parents leave every single thing for the teacher and the school to do, and I have to shake my head. Now, the question here is, at the early childhood age, what it is that the parent should be doing and what it is that the school should be doing. I'd like to get your take on that, ma'am.
Childhood stage, we obviously need more parental or guardians or siblings or family members to be with them, because I am aware that you would need the parent to help some of them, even in terms of logging on and to follow the instructions. So I know that it would be challenging for persons who have to work or persons who wouldn't have persons to supervise the child while they're online. So that is always a challenge. I remember when we first looked at rolling out the G Suite platform, we had said that the nursery schools would have to do something differently. And then the principals of the nursery school said, no, we want to be part of that. And they worked with their parents. They made sure that they had email addresses, and they were working, especially locked down, a lot with them. But it is a challenge, especially if you have more than one child in the household. So you can have a secondary school age child, one in primary school, and then one in nursery school. And you have to spend time with the nursery school one to make sure that they're logged on and that they're doing things. So what a lot of the nursery schools did is they had a blended approach. Once we had permission to open and we allowed the principals to go to their school, they collected materials, they collected manipulatives, and they took them to some of their children. Or if at one school they would make sure that every child had some sort of manipulatives, they gave them more worksheet kind of activities, things that the parents might be able to work with them. So the online by itself for the young ones will not be sufficient. Although we know there are some 3- and 4-year-olds that will spend all day on a tablet, and they will be able to do the games, but we still have to make sure that there is some formal education going on. So it is the younger ones and the nursery schools, they have been working together. I know that they've been working with Erdiston, and they've been coming up with different ways of doing things. We are in discussion now with IDB and CBC, and we're looking at utilizing our radio station, 91.3 FM, to put more programs on so that it's more using the television. We are in discussions with CBC about even a television station that we can actually use so that we can have that interaction going on. So it has to be a different approach with the early childhood years than with the older ones.
Okay, I want to talk back to the transportation concerns that are being raised here a lot online and off air, in relation to how do we get some compliance to health and safety rules on transportation, because there's little to no supervision when the children are going to and fro. What is the discussion or decision around transportation and these young ones?
Well, that's why we're looking at the class 4 now. When we go to September, we have to look at other ways. But we have been in discussion with the transport board. And, for instance, there's some schools that needed some extra assistance in getting children there. We have the Granley Adams. We have the Aline School. We were in discussion only this week, the Mount Tabor, where we have children coming from, I don't want to call it wrong places, but areas where the bus will not travel directly to the, if we say you live in Cherry Grove and you have to get to Mount Tabor. So we are working with them. But we had discussions months ago about even having a guard on some buses or some sort of a monitor, an adult
who would monitor
while the children were on the buses. But we obviously would need the drivers to give us and lend us some assistance, and even some of the adults who are actually there monitoring the children. If the children can walk, that is what we're advising. I was in a PTA meeting where we're looking, as you would have noticed, there are 3 schools that will not be at their school location. LT Gay, Laura C. Gay will be at Combermere, and we had a parent very concerned about the child walking on that Codrington Road and having to cross by the light. We have actually spoken to the police. They are aware of that situation, and they are going to be monitoring. I told the parent there are 11, 10, and 11-year-olds. We need to teach them the correct way of walking on the street and using the street.
And so plus, there's the safety traffic officers in that would have been helping them to cross at LT Gate that you can probably move a little further across.
We've actually placed that warden, the warden by Comba Mayor. The other group that, so Blackman and Gollop, they're going to SJPI. We've actually placed two wardens at that area because that's a pretty wide highway that they actually have to cross. And then the third one for St. Giles, although there is stop lights on Government Hill, we're not relying only on that. We're going to have, there's going to be a traffic warden by Springer to allow them to go through, and then there's a traffic warden further up by Charles F. Room. So the police, they're working with us as it relates to the traffic warden. But as it relates to the bus and the transportation, we are in consultation with the transport board, and we would want that the adults be adults to look out for children as well and make sure that they're doing the right thing. And for parents, again, going back to what Mr. Eiffel and the caller said earlier, parents, we need to teach our children the correct way to do these things and these protocols to maintain them.
Excellent. I just want to get back to the lines as they're built.